welcome to your no
Blog
show.
Talk Radio.
And good evening, and welcome to Your No Show, the show where we ask people to come and share with us what it is that they are doing in the world to make a difference. How is it that they are showing up? How is it that universal impersonal principle or the God force is showing up within them? How do they know whether or not it's working? What do they want to work in the world? What is it that is different because they are doing whatever it is that they are doing that was not going on before? How's that working for you, as Dr. Phil says? How do you know? And they share that with us because they are wanting for people to know that there is a way, that there is a space and a place where we can all go and achieve our goals, accomplish our visions, and move forward in life. My name is Robert J.V. McMillan, and it is my pleasure on behalf of Carrie Kelly and all of the staff here at the Renford Broadcast Network to invite you to our No Show. We are excited this evening because we have a dear gentleman with us who has been around for a little while. I mean, this is not the first his first go-around, and so we are excited that Reverend C. William Mercer is with us this evening on this date to share with us all about a lot of different things, and specifically about one book that we will talk about initially and then others that we will get into. And that book is called Courage, Conviction, and Consciousness, 365 Days of Inspiration from the Women of New Thought. And he has two other books as well, but I want to tell you a little bit about him before we get into the book and the conversation. Reverend Will co-ministers Divine Science Church Without Walls in New York City's Harlem neighborhood with his wife, Reverend Sadari Corden Mercer. And he has served as president of the Divine Science Ministers Association from 2009 to 2013. From 2012 to 2014, he served as president of Divine Science Federation International. Will's passion for history led him to write three recent books. I've told you about the first one. The next one is Present at the Beginning, 2014, and in 2015, The Christology Connection, both of which focus on the history of New Thought in America, Metaphysics in America, as well as the life and work of Divine Science founder Melinda Elliott Kramer. In recent years, Will has spoken at the New Thought, Divine Science, Religious Science, Unity, and Independent New Thought gatherings across the country, as well as presenting at INTA congresses from 2009 through 2013. I am so pleased to welcome him to our space, to our place, and to let him know that he is already loved. Good evening, Reverend Will, and how are you, my friend? How's it going?
I'm wonderful, and that was so impressive. I sat back here and I thought, wow, this is somebody I want to know.
And well, you know what? Before the evening is over, Reverend Will, I promise you, you will know him well, okay? You will know him wonderfully well. And as a matter of fact, I'll bet you already do.
Oh, I do.
So we're really glad that we were able to make this connection for this evening and get you to be a part of our program. Carrie Kelly is also here with us, and in a little while, she's going to come in and talk with us and ask questions of Reverend Will as well. T. tell me a little bit about how this book came about for you. What was it that made you want to write a book about these prominent and important women in the New Thought metaphysical movement, and what made this the time to do that?
Well, first of all, Robert, I want to thank you again for inviting me, and thank you and Carrie for this evening's show. I think we're going to have a lot of fun. This third book really came out of the first two in the sense that I'm a divine scientist, and our movement within New Thought was founded by Melinda Kramer. And so the first book that I wrote revolved around a series of class notes that had been really hidden from view for almost 125 years. And so in revealing those, I became much more intimate with the nature of her growth in the movement and the people that joined her and then followed her after her death in 1906. And that would be Nona Brooks and Fannie James, and in St. Louis, a man named H.H. Schrader. But the reality was that I was moving in this company of women as I wrote about Melinda Kramer. And then book number two, The Christology Connection, is kind of an extension of the story of her career, particularly at its zenith. And somewhere along the way, I sat and put a list together of all the phenomenal women that I was aware of, because if you write about Melinda Kramer, you have to be aware of and familiar with Emma Curtis Hopkins. And if you're familiar with Emma, then you're going to be a bit familiar with Mary Baker Eddy. And as we move toward our own time in history, the number of women just multiplies. This was very much an extension of the out push of women into society that was identified with suffrage and a number of other activist movements that brought women forth during the last half, the last quarter particularly of the 19th century. So I found this list sometime this summer, this past summer, and I thought, well, gosh, you know, maybe that's the next book. And I thought, well, how do I do this? And laid out a calendar and started to fill in names, and thought when I got to about 40 or 50 that I'd probably found as much as I was going to find. And then five more would turn up, and I'd look in a different resource, and I'd locate number of other women that required exploration. And by the time it was all said and done, the numbers actually exceeded the 105. I now believe we're at 107 that are in the final version of the book.
Wow. Wow. 107 women. And what is the time frame, Reverend Will, for your study? What, from what year to what year? What period of time?
Well, I focused on women who had transitioned. So the time frame really runs from 1870, when we have Mary Baker Eddy appearing on the scene with a first version of her book, up to the present time. I have women from both the Universal Foundation for Better Living and from Unity and even from Religious Science who have passed very recently, within the last year or two. And so it really not only tracks the importance of women in the early movement, but the continuing role and the strengthening role and the expansive role that women play in how the New Thought movement grew through the 20th century to the point where it is today.
And what's really exciting to me about this opportunity is that for people who are familiar with New Thought metaphysics, they may not know all of the various pieces that are a part of this movement. Of course, everyone knows Michael Beckwith in the metaphysical arena because of The Secret, basically. And so then when people say, oh, that's what it is that you're connected with. You're connected with that philosophy, I would usually say yes, because to stop at that point and then go into how it is that we are all interrelated and interconnected would then be very confusing for them. But that's what I love about this book that you have, because you help people to understand the differences in the various philosophies, but without boring them to the extent that they want to say, oh, my God, this is too much for me to take right now, because it really, really is not, is it?
No. You know, there's a common theme, and some of us call the golden cord that runs through all of New Thought and that connects us all very viscerally with one another. I don't see often a great deal of difference between the proprietary brand names that we have in New Thought any more than I do the sometimes groceries on the shelf. There is not all that much difference. Do we have our own heroes and heroines? Certainly. The religious science movement and Ernest Holmes are inseparable, and so on with the Fillmores and Unity. But the truth is that these movements have been very expansive, and New Thought really is a very broad umbrella. You know, that's what allows me to consider people like Helen Schuckman of A Course in Miracles and Nora Smith Holm, who wrote A Runner's Bible, as being New Thought characters in their own right, although you not identify them with any one of the denominations.
That's right. Which then allows all of us to kind of have an opportunity to share with other people in the traditional philosophies who are trying to bridge the gap and understand all of it, to understand that we too have our differences and our ways of talking with people at different times. But that makes it fun. That's what it's all about. You know, the ability to know and to record this, especially before the seasoned ones or the seniors who are still with us leave us, so that they too can share this oral tradition with us, so that we can put it down and have it be an important part of our conversations.
Well, and I think because of my own experience in finding these women, that if they're not found again, or if they're not found at this moment, you know, the time passes when we can clearly locate them, clearly differentiate their voice from others, and hear them in the fashion that they chose to be heard. One of the fascinations for me is that this book, because it provides 365 different inspirational messages, there's a voice for every ear. To paraphrase another similar comparison, the truth is that a different author or a different writer will appeal to a different reader, and there's the richness in what the book provides.
Absolutely. Well, I want to read the foreword to the book, if I may. And we mentioned him a little bit earlier, but the foreword to your book is written by Michael Bernard Beckwith, who, of course, is the founder of the Agape International Spiritual Center in California. And I'll just read this. It's not that long. It says, "Some months ago," Michael says, "my editor presented me with a manuscript accompanied by a letter from its author inquiring if I would consider contributing a foreword to his soon-to-be-published book. The title piqued my immediate interest, but it was upon turning to the first page that I blurted out, 'It's about time!' And indeed it is, because as the history of New Thought proves, it was its women teachers and students who, beginning in the 1800s, pioneered and grounded a movement that to this day impacts our postmodern spiritual and cultural landscape. Most notable among them is Emma Curtis Hopkins, who was known to have been a feminist in her generation, as well having said that she and the women she ordained were messengers of the new era of the Holy Mother Spirit. She also taught many suffragettes, including Ella Wheeler Wilcox, who, in 1915, sold 50,000 copies of her booklet, What I Know About New Thought. Let me repeat that. In 1915, this woman sold 50,000 copies of her booklet, What I Know About New Thought, which was published by Elizabeth Towne, president of the INTA, or the International New Thought Alliance, in 1924. From Myrtle Fillmore and Nona Brooks to more contemporary teachers such as Johnny Coleman and Mary Tumpkin, who both were with Universal Foundation for Better Living, these visionary ministers and practitioners filled positions of leadership under the umbrella of new thought, including mental science, divine science, unity, and religious science. The women whose works are included and celebrated in this book were contributors not only to new thought, but also to a new formation of selfhood for women, one that to this day affects political, social, spiritual, and economic reform. Nowhere will you find such a comprehensive collection of spirit-inspired writings by such extraordinary women as Dr. Will Mercer has brought together within these pages. May you draw great inspiration, encouragement, and heartfelt enthusiasm to cultivate your own spiritual practice that this book offers as a teaching in how to live a life centered in spirit, unconditional love, compassion, peace, creativity, wholeness, and abundance in harmony with the laws governing the universe. Michael Bernard Beckwith, founder of Agape International Spiritual Center. A lot of beautiful words there and a lot of truth in that piece. Will, tell me about how it was that you came about enlisting the support of Michael Beckwith to write this piece for you.
Well, I'm most honored that he agreed to do it. I've been an admirer for some time. I think I first saw him in early 2008, and I was late to the show from that standpoint because he'd been around for quite some time at that point. But he is a spellbinder by any measure, and an absolute joy to hear and to absorb this wonderful energy that he conveys. And I had occasion to see him at the Panorama of Truth that was held in Jamaica this past summer. So we have mutual contacts, and I wrote the letter and passed it along and then went into prayer. And fortunately... Spirit had the same outlook in mind as I did. Michael was kind enough to agree, and then it was a matter of him having the time to do it, and I so appreciate the effort that he made to help me with this.
Yeah, well, knowing Michael, he probably said, how could I not, you know, as he kind of indicated in that piece, how could he not, because it's such a powerful book of women to be brought about, and knowing a few of the ladies that that you mentioned a moment ago, Dr. Tumpkin was a very, very, very good friend, and Reverend Dr. Johnny Coleman. When we went from Washington, D.C. to Chicago to visit Chicago on business, I was going there, and a friend had accompanied me on the trip, and we just wanted to go by her office. We didn't think we'd be able to get in and see her, but she was so accommodating. She said, of course, come on in. Now, where are you from? We said, Unity of Washington, D.C. She said, oh, Amalia Frank. Of course, I know Amalia. I remember Amalia, so forth and so on. And so it just, you know, we were just walking on cloud nine, course, from being in her presence. As well. Now, in this book, you also include people like Mary Baker Eddy, and many of us have been taught that that she was not exactly directly involved in the New Thought movement, kind of on the fringes, if you will. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, she's really a precursor, and I would say that much of what she has to say in her works is pure New Thought. It's kind of a but-for game, if you will, because if it were not for Mary Baker Eddy, we wouldn't have Emma Curtis Hopkins and other voices like Ursula Gestefeld. But the truth is that, for example, with Emma Curtis Hopkins, when she started out, what do you suppose she was using as her notes for teaching Christian Science in Chicago? She was using what she learned from Mary Baker Eddy.
You know,
it became much more expansive with Emma, and I don't mean in by any means to indicate that she was limited by that, but we tend to use the materials with which we're most familiar when we begin that kind of activity, and then it expanded from there. So there's a great debt, if you will, owed to Mary Baker Eddy for awakening and really kind of charging forth as the first voice among a whole, you know, massive display of women's voices that came thereafter.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is The No Show. My name is Robert J.V. McMillan. We are talking with Dr. C. Will Mercer, who has written several books that we're going to talk a little bit about this evening. But the one that we are kind of focusing on right now is his latest book, which will be in your hands by the first day of the very next month, if not sooner. But we know by then. And that title is Courage, Conviction, and Consciousness. And it talks about 105 or so, I believe, women from the New Thought metaphysical movement. And I'm going to ask Reverend Will, Dr. Will, to share with us again the timeline for these women, because I think that is so important. And not only are we talking about white women, but we are talking about African American women. We are talking about women from, we are talking about Native American women, and we are talking about others from various spaces and places. And we have a tendency to think that religiosity is kind of limited to one space or something. And actually, now that I'm hearing myself say that, that's probably true. Religiosity is, but spirituality is not. Am I right in that, Dr. Will?
It's everywhere present.
Yeah.
You know, spirit, our access to spirit is immediate. And the very interesting thing about this panoply of women is that they all express that in their own way and in their own modality, because here we have preachers, we have teachers, we have women who simply wrote monthly, daily offerings for various publications. They were certainly strong spiritual women representing a big point of view and an important point of view, but they never stood in the pulpit. They never did that kind of work, and yet they pioneered in their own ways. And the display of women coming through the 20th century is just absolutely marvelous, because it had such a wonderful beginning with people like Emma Curtis Hopkins and others, including Nona Brooks and so on. But then we come into the second and third generation, and we're just as enriched by the voices that rise in that period, particularly in unity and, divine science and religious science. Religious science comes along a bit later, but comes on the scene almost fully grown, in the sense that there was an immediate flush of feminine activity within religious science. The first associate editor of Religious Science Monthly was a woman. One of Ernest's very close associates, a woman named Augusta Rundell, known as Gussie. Here was a woman who not only wrote, but was socially connected in Los Angeles in a way that allowed her to assist him in the early days of his ministry in getting the exposure that he needed. You know, they pioneered in so many ways. They were both behind the scenes and in front of the curtain. They were just a marvelous collection of workers, and they would have all been proud to be known as workers of this scientific movement, this metaphysical movement that characterized New Thought in all of its various flavors.
Now, in terms of your research, I know that you spoke to Dr. Tompkin and so many others deliberately and intentionally, and they were here for you to do so. How did you pull other information in terms of those who had transitioned, as we call it in our faith walk? How did you go about recreating that information? And was it difficult for you to get it from people, or were people excited about sharing it?
You know, this is an absolutely marvelous aspect of the work, and it's kind of the collateral effect of the work from my standpoint, but these were really God-guided people who I was led to, and they were led to help me in any way that they could. You know, we were finding sermon materials that hadn't been out of the file drawer for maybe 30, 40 years or more. Photographs that were taken off the wall and scanned, and I'm receiving JPEGs of collections of snapshots, but the what I needed was there, and the expression of joy from some of the daughters and granddaughters that I worked with to know that their mother's or their grandmother's work was going to come on the stage again, which is very exciting. And I, there was a lot of healing associated with that for them, because in one case I remember hearing the statement, well, you know, my mother's work has been in the garage now for 5 years and I have just so avoided looking at it, but I now realize that your phone call means that that's what I am given to do. And she did.
Wow. Isn't that awesome? So, and now not only is she touched and blessed by this opportunity to know of her mother's work, but her children, so her mother's grandchildren, excuse me, will be able to also get what they need to get and know about their people, those who came in front of them, and get some questions answered in terms of why do we do things this way? You know, because I remember there's that story in the African-American community where the granddaughter was in the kitchen with mother and grandmother, and she was doing something with the ham, preparing it for the meal, and so she cut the ends off of the ham and she threw them in the trash, and then she was preparing the other part, and all of a sudden, great-grandmother said, "Baby, why did you just do that?" And she said, "Do what, grandmother?" She said, "Well, you just cut the ends off of that ham, and you took them, and you threw it in the trash to go out and be thrown away. Why did you do that?" She said, "Well, but great-grandmother, I did that because mother did that, and mother did that before because her mother did it like that, and she did it because you did it like that." And she said to her, "Dr. Will, yes, baby, I did, but we didn't have refrigeration back then. So we had to throw out whatever it was that we could not use. But, sweetheart, you have a huge refrigerator over there that's full of too much other stuff. Please go get that ham, wash it off, and put it in the refrigerator so that it can be used." You know, and when we think about those types of stories, anecdotal though they may be, they are so true, and it is especially true in where it is that we are right now. I want to bring Carrie Kelly in and ask her to follow up with questions that I'm sure that she has at this point as well. Carrie, good evening, and how are you?
I'm doing wonderfully well, thank you. Thank you so much for this opportunity. And my question is basically, I'm interested in the history of where Dr. Wild came from before the New Thought spirituality. Were you always interested in that? Did you grow up in that movement, or did you come to it later and as a process of your spiritual growth?
That's an interesting question, Carrie. And as with many people, the blossoming of my spirituality really came at midlife, a little bit past midlife. But I've been exposed to New Thought all of my life. My great aunt, Ruth Carr, who is included in the book, was a divine science minister ordained at age 88. But she had been raised with a Dutch Reform mother who kept a scrapbook of Unity clippings from each of the Unity publications, the biweekly newspaper that came out. So there was all kinds of New Thought hitting me, particularly from my Aunt Ruth, through my early years. And I used to put it that it rained on me prolifically, but I remained remarkably dry until a point in life where it really became important. And I found myself tracking through materials that she had given me many years earlier, recognizing that what she had had to say at that time, which may not have had the significance that it was intended to, was now having that significance for me. And, you know, for any of us, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And so I went through a very interesting period of my life in my 50s where I was kind of absorbed in a period of what I would call epiphanation, where the nature of the epiphanies in my life was just pounding and was ever present. And I describe it as moving forward in a wind tunnel. You had to lean forward, because if you had tried to stand straight up in the wind tunnel, you would have fallen backward. And that was the nature of discovery and exploration that I was engaged in at that time. And it really lit the fuse, if you will, on what has been a very rich spiritual experience for me.
So can you put a finger on the event or situation or circumstance that's the turning point for your exploration?
You promise you won't laugh?
No, I won't laugh.
I was living in Mesa, Arizona. I had moved there in 2004 or 5, thinking that I was retiring. How foolish that thought was. But in settling in, as I frequently did when I moved, and that wasn't all that often, but I would always try to get grounded with the New Thought community soon after I arrived. Well, I found myself so short of entertainment that in attending one Unity church that I dearly love down there. The minister there is Julianne Lewis, but she had a Friday night spiritual movie event. And I thought, I may as well come to the Friday night movie. I don't have anything else going on. So it was me and 19 women watching this movie, which was the story of Neil Donald Walsh. It was a Conversations with God, the movie version. And I'm watching this movie, and I'm thinking, you know, I know what this man wrote. This man wrote A Conversation with God. And I also knew that I had the book, and I also knew why I had not touched the book, which had been in my possession for about 11 years. And it was specifically because of who it was that gave it to me. And although I didn't throw the book out, I did not do much with it. Well, that night I finished up with the Friday night movie event and went home, and I could walk into a darkened office and reach onto the bookshelf and have that book in my hand immediately. I knew right where it was. And proceeded to read it over the next 24 hours, almost nonstop. And truly, that was a turning point. Neil Donald Walsh's first book turned my life around on a dime. Fascinating.
Wow, that is fascinating. That is definitely fascinating. Well, thank you for sharing.
You're welcome.
Excellent. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to pause here just for a moment to share with you that this is the Renford Broadcast Network, and this is The No Show. My name is Robert J.V. McMillan, and we are so pleased that you decided to stop by here and be with us for this period of time. Our guest is Reverend Dr. C. William Mercer, and he has written this awesome book, several books, and I'm going to share with you all three of them. And then afterwards, just to put you on notice, Reverend Will, I'm going to ask you to tell people where they can get your books, the books that are already out, as well as the one that will be coming out at the end of this month. But those three books are the first one that we've been talking about a lot, Courage, Conviction, and Consciousness, 365 Days of Inspiration from the Women of New Thought. So, ladies, you are getting your due. And, yes, we know it's about time. The next book is in 2015 is The Christology, C-H-R-I-S-T-O-L-O-G-Y, Connection. And then in 2014, that book was present at the beginning. Again, those who were a part of that experience. And I'm going to ask Dr. Will to share with us a little bit about those books as well. But first, I want for him to tell you where it is that you might pick up these books. The other two are already available. All you have to do is pick up your telephone and give a call, and those are yours, I assume. And the third one, you may have to wait a day or two, but it's on its way. So, Dr. Will, where is it that folks can go to get your books?
The first two books, Present at the Beginning and Christology Connection, can both be purchased at greatntwomen.com, so greatnewthoughtwomen.com. Or another door to that same website is melindacramer.com. They're available there. They're also available on Amazon, and they're available in Kindle format and also the Apple format. So they can be obtained through iTunes, too. The third book, which can be pre-ordered at greatntwomen.com, will be available on Amazon as soon as I have hard copy in hand. But if you want to pre-order it, they'll be shipping out of here the moment that we have an open box.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. So that is awesome. And that is the way to how is it that people might reach you directly for speaking engagements, to have you come to wherever it is that they are. Right now, I happen to be in Little Rock, Arkansas. Carrie Kelly happens to be in some place in space called California. I've heard of it, but I'm not sure that it's really there. And others are elsewhere. So where is it that people can reach you by email or whatever vehicle you would like to share?
I think probably the easiest way is to email me, and the address is cwillmercer@gmail.com, cwillmercer@gmail.com. The three books are all independently listed on Facebook, and I'm on Facebook as well. So if you want to find me at C. Will Mercer, we can be friends on Facebook. And I generally keep my friends advised as to the course of activity because things are popping right now in this printing process. And I'm nervous as a cat, so I have to share that.
Well, we will join together, and I just want for you from this point forward, whenever you think about saying that, in order for you to not have to say that and for that to not become so, Dr. Will, I want for you to imagine all of us holding our hands together, holding hands in a circle, and you are in the center of that circle, and God's love and light and healing and wholeness and goodness and grace are emanating from our joint activity to surround you with the peace of God, the love of God, and the goodness of God, to let go of whatever that energy was, and we consider it gone right now, never to bother us anymore. So you don't have to say that anymore either. And we know it to be so, and so it is.
Amen.
Okay, indeed. So I want to move forward. Thank you, Carrie Kelly, for asking those questions. I'm going to come back to you in a moment to ask more from you in terms of what your additional thoughts might be. But for right now, Dr. Will, I'd like to ask a question, which is an interesting question, and usually the ladies are the one that keep asking these questions because of the fact that usually things are flipped around. But now I'm going to ask, so when is the book going to come out about the men? Where are we going to be shown forth as those who pioneered this effort? Because I know there was a guy in Washington, D.C., and I imagine you know him by the name of Reverend Lafayette Seymour, who is a very good friend of yours and pioneered that effort. And actually, he and Doug Kenny pushed me to become president of the Capital District International New Thought Alliance. So in terms of, I'm so happy. Please, ladies, no, I don't want the letters. I don't want the emails. No, I am not saying that you all don't deserve your book. You do. That's why I have Will on the show. But when is the book coming out on the guys, Will? Are you going to do one on the men as well?
You know, truly, I don't see that in the future for me. It's not to suggest that it wouldn't be a valid effort, but I find the women far more fascinating, and the men driven in different ways. You know, so the one word that I didn't include in the title that probably belonged there was the word joy, because these women were achieving a lifelong ambition to simply be heard and to be recognized, you know, for their mastery of their spiritual outlook, and there was much more celebratory feeling around writing this book than I think there would be a book for men.
Well, that was actually a setup question, you know, as those of us who do this for a living and for life usually do, because the title, I think, Courage, Conviction, and Consciousness, at a time when this type of modality, this New Thought metaphysical movement, was not accepted widely, and it wasn't too far from the time when people were burned at a stake for professing anything outside what others considered to be the norm. So I wonder if you might speak to that, to the courage, the conviction, and the consciousness of the women during that era, to step forth boldly and share this information, and the why that they did that.
I think it was irresistible. I think that your soul stirs to a point where there is little choice left for you but to express. And that's what I kept hearing from these women as I studied them and brought forth what I felt was important work of theirs to share, was that this was inevitable, and it was imminent with them. So to do anything but to share which was just bursting forth from them was not within their capacity. They simply had to express their vision of spirit and their relationship with God and take faith, take the steps in faith that you cannot see before you. And that's what every one of them did.
And what about the people that began to follow them? Did they have just groups and groups and groups of people initially? Was it like a meeting at Michael Beckwith's Agape on Sunday, where you have these hundreds of thousands of people that are coming, or was it less, Dr. Will?
I think in the early going, and we certainly have evidence of what Mary Baker Eddy achieved and also what Emma Curtis Hopkins and Melinda Kramer achieved in attracting a following. In Melinda's case, the following began among her neighbors who noticed that her health had taken a severe turn in the right direction. And so they were saying, well, Mrs. Kramer, how is it that you're able to be up and around and doing things you weren't doing a month ago? And she engaged in an explanation of the steps that she had taken to heal herself, her relationship with the omnipresence, and began teaching her friends and neighbors, who in turn healed themselves. What this was, at heart, was a healing movement where people found that the skills necessary to heal oneself or others were transferable, that they did not have to come from an orthodox organ, whether it be a priest or a minister. It was a relationship with God that you could share with anyone around you. And if they had the faith that you had in healing yourself, they too could not only be healed, but in turn help to heal others. And you look at a group of women in particular, one comes to mind. There's a page in the book that talks about Nona Brooks and the wonderful cadre of women that surrounded her as she took on the full responsibility for Divine Science in 1906. And these were stalwarts, you know, 15, 20 women, every one of them a writer, every one of them a preacher, every one of them sent out to the hinterlands after they were ordained. This was that era where you were ordained and you went forth and you shared and you established centers and so on. You know, today, New Thought Ministry and ministry, I'm sure, in many of the Orthodox Protestant movement would be part-time jobs. You know, there's other occupational activity necessary to support the ministry because of the nature of people's attention to church business and the need to invest in the place where you are getting your spiritual sustenance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of the questions that I want to ask before it slips my mind, and you mentioned her earlier, you mentioned Helen Schumann, the woman who is responsible for A Course in Miracles. But can you talk a little bit more about how it is that you included Ms. Schumann in that, in with these women, and what it was about her that so captivated you?
You know, there's an approach that would suggest that almost anything of a spiritual nature that's put in writing is channeled. It's God-guided in some respect or other. And so the A Course in Miracles, which is very clearly a channeled work produced by this woman and a cohort of hers at Columbia University, brought forth this wonderful study, and it is clearly connected to the New Thought movement in terms of the truth and principle which support what is there. And so I felt that it would be far more appropriate to include her than to somehow miss the opportunity to explore what she had to say. And I think that you'll find that the quotations that come from A Course in Miracles for her are, valid in any New Thought church that you or I could walk into. They simply weren't known first and foremost in that arena. By the same token, for example, not to wish her any ill, but if Esther Hicks was not with us today, Esther Hicks would likely be included simply because the whole process that she's gone through with the law of attraction is very much a keynote in New Thought. So it would be a shame to ignore her. There are others that I would like to have included, but in some cases the licensing fees were simply not appropriate and they weren't key to the movement.
Yeah, for anyone who doesn't know Esther and Jerry before he transitioned several years ago, gave us the wonderful opportunity to sit and be a part of a channeled opportunity where Esther was relating what it was that Esther, the physical person, was relating through the entity that was within her, what spirit was saying. Now, what's interesting is that, as my children and my grandchildren called it, in the olden days, we always were aware that there were folks who were able to connect to the other side and then share information back with us. But for some reason, in our modern day of have to have it right now and instantaneous this and instantaneous that, we seem to have forgotten how to connect ourselves so that we can get that same information that Esther Hicks shares with us or that others share with us in that same way. And it's not, and all of the ascended masters, correct me, Dr. Will, if I'm wrong, but all of the ascended masters, Jesus, the Buddha, Lord Krishna, all shared these words, these things that I do, you too can do, and greater than these, because I have to get out of here. I have to roll. I'm going to see Dad. So I will see you a little bit later. So that's what Dr. Will is talking about now in terms of the Hicks and Jerry Hicks. And my friend Kim and I went to see them quite often in the Northeast. They were always phenomenal, always awesome, and it's a tremendous movement. So that's what he's talking about now. And perhaps the next book that you write, Dr. Will also include Esther and others who are about the business of doing some really interesting and unique things right now. I want to ask you all to stand by for just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Robert J.D. McMillan. You are listening to The No Show. We are so pleased that you decided to stop by here. We know that there were many places that you could have gone and other things that you could have done, but you chose to be here now. That's a book, too. Baba Ram Dass a while back wrote that one. And so we are pleased that you decided to be here. We have phenomenal individuals on talking about how it is that we can become better and how it is, where it is that we can go to get information. The place and the space right now that C. Will Mercer is sharing with you that you can go to, three places right now, and get phenomenal information on women from yesterday and yesteryear who were a part of this experience called New Thought. In his book, Courage, Conviction, and Consciousness, that's one of the books, that's the first one. You may, and I'll give you information where you can get that in a little while. Courage, Conviction, and Consciousness, a strong combination of terms. And that's what it's all about for all of us. Over 105 women in that book. And he talks about them and about their specific searches and what it was that guided them spiritually to do what it was that they were doing. in order to be, have, do, and know. I want to bring Carrie Kelly back into our soiree so that she, too, might have an opportunity from the perspective of the feminine side. Carrie, how does it make you feel to know that one day, sometime soon, somebody's going to write a book about the No Show, and they're going to talk about Carrie Kelly? They won't say anything at all about Robert J.V. McMillan. And I want to know how it is that you plan to share with them about me. But in the meantime, tell me, how does it make you feel to know that Dr. Will has written this book about women like you who have gone on to prepare a place for you so that you can then have a clearer understanding of what is available to you?
What comes to mind is gratitude, immense, immeasurable gratitude. You know, to have so many women highlighted in such a way that their words are there to convey wisdom around courage, conviction, and consciousness, where we have so many voices that may want to steer us away from those things. And the fact that you gathered it and put it all in one place and put it out there for us to have encouragement and inspiration to have the courage, the conviction, and the consciousness that gives us what we need to get through the human condition is there's not even a word to express it, but gratitude for your work and for being obedient to the movement of the spirit within you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'm very grateful for your comments. I would tell you that one of the major lessons that this book provides from my standpoint is the opportunity for people to now invest energy in tracking some of these writers down, because I'm only offering a small taste of who it was they were and what it is that they were about. But their written works are available in most cases, and there is much more ground to be covered for each and every one of these women. So my effort is really to not only provide this small gift, but also the open door for further exploration around any and all of these wondrous women.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and thank you, and we appreciate that. I'm wondering if you could give me a little synopsis or snapshot of what divine science is. How does it differ from New Thought, or does it differ from New Thought, or is it mostly based on the same principles? Or give me a snapshot of divine science.
Well, divine science is quintessential New Thought. Divine science is the oldest of the New Thought denominations. Ernest Holmes was ordained in divine science before he went on to write A Science of Mind and establish his movement. The association between the Fillmores and Melinda Kramer during their era was remarkable. Melinda Kramer visits with the Fillmores in the spring of 1891, returns home after visiting Chicago and speaking at Emma Curtis Hopkins College in June, and upon returning to San Francisco starts the San Francisco branch of Silent Unity. The association between these founders was collegial and almost familial. And so what we're looking at with the likes of Melinda Kramer and Myrtle and Charles Fillmore and even Ernest in his era, is the purity of New Thought, the foundational material that supports all the places that New Thought has gone since. So I would suggest that the foundational teachings in unity and in divine science and perhaps Homes of Truth with Annie Ricks Millitz and her sister and Religious Science with Ernest Holmes all are centered in very much the same way, the possible exception being a somewhat less Christ-centered faith within Religious Science, which regards Jesus as a way-shower among other way-showers. Unity and Divine Science pretty much are traditionally Christian in that regard.
That's right. Absolutely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you know what? Goodness gracious, time passes when you're having fun. It's just so interesting. The book is called Courage, Conviction, and Consciousness. The author is Reverend Dr. C. Will Mercer. You may reach him at greatntwomen.com. You may also reach him at amazon.com, on Kindle and Apple. His Gmail address is, his email Gmail address is cwillmercer@gmail.com. He is also on Facebook. So if you go and friend, look for C. Will Mercer, you will find him right there. Reverend Will, I want to share with you how appreciative we are that you decided to spend a few moments with us. We are grateful for that time. We had already decided, you and I had, that there would be another time for us to come together and do this all over again. So, ladies and gentlemen, just look for us to have another opportunity for part two. We knew that we would only scratch the surface, but we wanted to do that tonight. Will, let me let you have the final word, and then I'll close out.
Well, it's a word that we've used several times tonight, and it is gratitude. I'm so grateful that God directed me to create this book. I had a number of women, not just a few women, who said, "Where do you get off writing a book about women?" And perhaps, as they might put it, I didn't have a dog in the fight, so it was easier for me to do it than it might have been for another woman. But the truth is that I'm so grateful and so thankful for all that has been given me and that I am gifted to share with you. Thank you.
We appreciate who it is that you are and how it is that you show up in the world. Next week, ladies and gentlemen, on this very same program, Reverend Dr. Charlotte Manning will be back with us to visit again. You remember her. She is my dear friend, and she has a brand new book as well that is coming out. Stay tuned. We thank you for who it is that you are, for how you show up. And until next week, go forth into this week, the next 7 days, and just look to see how it is that Spirit is blessing you, what the opportunities are that are coming to you, and know that it is because you deserve it, because of who it is that you are. Who are you? You are the beloved child of God in whom Spirit is well pleased. And so it is, and so it is, and so it is. And we'll see you next week. Bye, everybody. Thank you, Dr. Will. Thank you, Miss Carrie. We'll take care.
Bye, everybody.
God bless.